Good morning. My name is Dominic, one of the pastors here. If you're new, we're so glad you're here. And I've loved these videos. I love getting the inside scoop on what people think about Christmas and some fascinating answers. You can learn a lot here with these videos. We are super excited as well, as was hinted at in that video. We're going to be here Christmas Eve. We've said it every week. We're going to say it again later too. 5 o'clock Christmas Eve. It's going to be an amazing night. And as you've been around for last Christmas, well, if you were here for last Christmas Eve or if you were here for Easter, you know we do some creative stuff and we've got some great things planned both inside and weather permitting outside as well. So 5 o'clock Christmas Eve. We're super excited for that. We're in this series called Picture Perfect Christmas. And the idea is that we all have images of what the perfect Christmas would be, whether it's music, trees, lights, canned oysters, whatever your picture of an image of a perfect Christmas would be. We all have that. And we also know what it's like in this season to feel these moments that aren't so perfect, whether it's the stress or busyness, the demands of this particular season. And this season's almost kind of a microcosm of how we live day in and day out, that we live in this tension of that we long for something. And we also know what it's like to live in this world where things don't often work as they should. Last week, Mark took us through the story of Mary hearing from the angel that she was going to be a mother, and something she wasn't expecting, but the angel said, you are going to be the mother of the Savior of the world, of Jesus. And for Mary, that represented this moment that she responds with and says, okay, I am the Lord's servant, which sounds like the obedient and humble thing to say, and it was. But it also is a statement saying, I don't know what's coming, but I'm going to kind of put my life in your hands. Because for Mary, this announcement that she would be pregnant was changed, as you can imagine, changed the course of her life. This wasn't something she was expecting. This wasn't something that was kind of going to make everything better. This was actually going to make things a lot more complicated. And so we kind of left last week with this sense of if you were in that story and you heard the angel say this announcement, what would your answer be in that moment? Today, we're going to look at kind of the second half of Mary's answer, if you want to think of it that way. Today, we're going to look at Mary, a song that Mary wrote, a poem or song, however you want to think about it. And in essence, this is kind of her process of her answer. This is her kind of working it out in even more detail and even more creative ways. And so I want to take you through Mary's song. We're going to look at some ways that she saw and understood who God is and what that meant for her life. We're going to talk a little bit later on an example in our culture. Brandon and I are going to talk about that where we see this kind of thing play out in a positive way. And then I'm going to tell you a background, the story behind one of the Christmas songs that we sing every year. And we're going to sing that a little bit later as well. But we begin with Mary's first couple lines in this story, in this song, in this poem, of this sense of that represents her process of hearing this news that she is going to be the mother of the Savior of the world. And so she begins a song. This is in Luke chapter 1 and verse 46. She said, and it says, and Mary says, my soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. Now, a couple things stand out to me from these first couple verses. One is this whole format, this idea of song or poem. It's quite interesting that we're not just getting Mary saying these things. She's not just saying, you know, I have something to say. I think I'll write this down. No, for her, this is a creative act, a poem or song. Songs do a couple things for us when you think about songs that you sing or songs that you resonate with, or maybe songs you listen to on the way here, or songs you'll listen to on the way home. Songs do a couple things in my mind is that one, songs are in essence like the language, I would put it this way, like the language of the soul. They kind of express something deep in us, or poems or whatever you want to think about. They express something deep in us that can't simply be expressed just in simple words. Bono, the iconic frontman for the band U2, said this about his songwriting. He said, music is a language of the spirit. He says, I think ideas and words are our excuse as songwriters to allow our heart or our spirit to run free. That there's something that happens in the lyrical realm that doesn't happen in simply an essay or an article. And so there's something going on here, I think, and when we read a song or a poem, and particularly Mary processing this whole news that she's going to be the mother of the Savior of the world. But I think music also does another thing. Music speaks truth at times when we don't know if we have the words to say it, or maybe we're not even sure we're fully with it. Again, to me, this represents Mary's process, her working out this experience and this encounter with this angel. Music has this thing, or when you read a poem, I read something the other day, a quote that just stuck with me, and it just felt like it ping-ponged and echoed throughout my entire being. It says something, and you kind of go, oh, I want that, or I long for that. I think if you think about that song we sang a few moments ago, So Will I, over and over again, it talks about what God's doing in the world, and then the refrain is, and so will I. And you can sing that a couple ways. You can sing that like, yes, that's what I am, and I've come today, and I'm fully aligned with that and on board with that. But you could also sing that going, I'm not sure if I'm there yet, but I want to be. Music does that to us. It kind of cuts into us and goes like, what's really at the depth and core of who we are? And that's the other thing. That's the second thing that stands out to me is the language that Mary uses. She says that my soul and my spirit rejoices. They're two separate words in the original language, but they're probably a bit of a parallelism here. And the soul is what one scholar called the deepest, highest, noblest part of humanity. It's that thing about you that makes you you. It's that thing of value about you. And so Mary's not just kind of like, hey, how's it going? You're like, great, everything's fine. And Mary's saying, this is something like deep in me. This is something that kind of is so intertwined with who I am. This is where I am. And this is her song. So her soul, her spirit, the noblest part, the deepest part of who she is, has something to say, and she's celebrating who God is. Why? And you can see this, and you can see this in this line, verse 49. And she says that the mighty one, or he who is mighty, has done great things for me. Like Mary's gotten to a place where she's like, look, I understand something about God, but that's not just staying here. It's now impacted my life. He's doing something through me. Yes, my life has changed course, but it's changed course in the purpose of God. So this is a song that represents for Mary something deep, the noblest part of her being. And it's her expression about who she understands God to be and how God has worked and is at work in her life. This is what drives her to this creative act of lyric, of poem, of song. Now, who does she understand God to be? Who is he like? Here's what we see in the next set of verses, verse 50 through the end. It says, for his mercy extends to those who fear him. From generation to generation, he has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised. And then we're told this line that we could just spend the rest of the morning on, but we just say it for now. It says that Mary stayed with Elizabeth for almost 3 months and then returned home. In other words, she took all this in and says, I just need to stay in this for a while. So she sits with this. She sits with this of who God is and who she's understood God to be. And these sets of verses are filled with imagery from the Jewish scriptures, from the Old Testament. But it's not simply that she's having this kind of scholar moment to like, let me just figure out God. Who God has been in the past has now impacted her life. This is not a song simply above her in some ethereal sense. This is a song, her song to God. And who does she understand God to be? What is his nature? A couple things stand out to me. One is that she refers to him as merciful. Merciful. Pretty broad term that we probably throw around a lot. One definition I read recently that I like a lot is that mercy deals with the misery of mistakes. Mercy deals with the misery of mistakes. If you are merciful towards someone, you are saying, you know what? That mistake you made, I'm not going to allow you to sit in the shame and the misery of that. I want to help us move forward. Like for Mary, she sees God as someone who wants people to get a new start. That for God, that Mary sees God as someone who doesn't do things to shame people or to box them into a corner. As you imagine getting that news as a young girl that you're now pregnant, where does she go from here? This isn't a God who's trying to do harm to her, but has something good for her. And not only that, but is going to continually be merciful towards her. This is how she understands God to be. She also understands God to be just. There's those lines in there where she talks about the proud being scattered, the proud being brought down, and the humble being lifted up. Now, that could refer to how you and I view ourselves and how we act towards one another. I wonder if also there's a sense, though, where it's a little bit about kind of how the social system was, or social class system was. That what if to be proud in that day was that you used other people, and at the expense of other people, you reached your heights. And the humble were those who were cast aside and put aside. And Mary says, you know what? You know how God operates? You know how I view God? God is the one who kind of flips that around. In other words, God is the one who sets the world right where it's gone wrong. So already we see a picture of Mary receiving this news from the angel. And she says, you know what? This has changed in my life, but here's how I understand God. He's one who helps people get a new start. He's not going to leave them in a place of shame. He's going to move them forward. Also, God's going to set right whatever whatever challenge may come out of this moment. And not only that, but she says that God's faithful. She looks back on the history of God's people. And she says, you know, God's been helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever and ever. This is verse 55, just as he promised to our ancestors. In other words, she says, you know what? Whatever may come in the future, I know the past has been marked by God's faithfulness. The past has been marked by God's faithfulness. Humanity's been a mess since Adam and Eve. We ruin relationships. We turn our own lives upside down. We struggle to listen to the call of God who's constantly calling us to something better. And yet we're stumbling towards grace. We find a God who she says is always remembering to be merciful. That's not like a reflection like he forgets. Like, oh yeah, almost forgot to be merciful to you. It's not that. It's more highlighting the fact that we constantly need someone saying, we particularly need the God of the universe saying, I'm not going to leave you here. It's time for a new start. So you can see, you can almost kind of put yourself in Mary's shoes that these pieces are going to help her move forward. That Advent for her was a coming to a place where she understood these things about God and kind of took it down and let it resonate into the deepest, noblest, highest part of who she was. This is the God she's chosen to trust. This is the God that she's willing to be open to listen to follow with whatever may come. Maybe that resonates with you. Maybe this Advent season, kind of like Mary, maybe you've feel like life's gone down a path you didn't expect. Maybe you feel like there are challenges up ahead that you're not sure what to do with. I think if that's you, I think Mary gives us hope. That for Mary, Advent meant that, hold on, in the midst of all of that uncertainty, I'm going to put myself back and trust the nature of God. That he is good and he's doing good through me. He's not done with me yet. He's not done. He's going to continually be at work for good. Each week we've been doing these Advent candles. And the third one's lit now, and it's it's something that Jesus followers have done for centuries. And this one that is lit is joy. Which I think is an interesting and as well as challenging theme to talk about or even to focus on as you think and look at that candle. Because joy can kind of is one of those things that seem like out of touch. It seems almost ethereal at times. It almost doesn't seem real at times. But I wonder if like listening to Mary's song that we begin to see that maybe joy is a lot more accessible than we think. That maybe joy is birthed when we take our soul and spirit, the noblest part of ourself, and put it in the hands of a good God. Maybe when that happens, joy begins to take place. The Apostle Paul talked about this transformation that happens, and the transformation that happened because Jesus came and because Jesus died, and the life that he offers to you and to me. And the Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Corinth, he said it this way in a statement just full of imagery. He talked about this kind of internal transformation that happens when we put ourselves in the hands of God in Jesus. He said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he said, "For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of the darkness,' so the God who spoke light into creation has made his light to shine in our hearts to give to us the light of the knowledge of God's glory displayed in the face of Christ." So for Paul, the creative God is recreating people. That whatever Advent may bring to you, whatever this season may bring to you, Advent sits over it with a promise that the creative God is recreating. He's doing something in people just like you and me. That he's been doing that since the very beginning of creation, and he will not stop. And all of that, Paul says, happens in Jesus. It happens because of Advent, because God came in the person of Jesus. And Advent lays the groundwork, sets the path for Easter and the cross, where Jesus died for you, and the empty tomb where he was raised to life to bring new life to you. Mary's song is not just Mary's song back in that day. It's not just like, "Oh, that's a really nice poem. I'm not really into poems, but I'll just skip that part and move on." No. Mary's song is our song. Mary's song is a model for us to kind of say, what are we bringing about the noblest, the deepest part of ourselves? What are we willing to take the risk on and put in the hands of the character of God? And say, "You know what, God? I don't know where this is going to go, but I trust you." That's what I want you to do with this as we kind of wrap up this morning. I want you to find ways or think through ways that you could create space to have that honest conversation, to be open to what God may be speaking to you this Advent season. To be willing to put your life in the hands and trust the character and nature of God. It's that honesty. It's getting to that place where your soul, spirit, the noblest part of you, is willing to take a risk and say, "You know what? I believe there's something good that's going to come out of this." Maybe you've done that. Maybe you're doing that now, and that's fantastic. Keep doing that. Maybe you did that at some point in years past. You see, maybe you kind of listen to this and you go, "I did that once, and then that's kind of not my story anymore." Or maybe you've never done that. Maybe you've heard people talk about God and who he is, and you just kind of said, "You know what, that just sounds too much for me." That wherever you are, I hope this Advent season you're willing to take a risk, to be honest with God, to be open with him, and to see what he might do if you put your life in his hands. There's a great example of this honesty, of kind of being open and kind of the deepest part of us coming out in a risky, but oftentimes good way. There's a good example of that in our culture and the examples around songwriting. I know probably not if you're like me, maybe there are some songwriters here. I'm not a songwriter, but if you've sung songs, you've connected with songs, and they do something in us that lead us to this place that we've kind of gotten to in ourselves that we don't even know 3 minutes in how we got there. And so I thought it'd be good to have a conversation. I'm going to ask Brandon to come out. A lot of you, maybe not a lot of you, may know that Brandon's a songwriter and kind of has that other thing that he does, and you can talk with him later about that. And but I thought to bring him out because he has experience in songwriting, and he has also written songs with people who have written for some very, very famous musicians. So this world of songwriting and honesty is very real for him, and he's got a lot of perspective that I think could help us as we and you and I consider taking this risk to trust God. So I thought it'd be good to have this conversation around this. And hi, Brandon.
Hi, I feel like this chair is going to break and we're really going to have a show on our hands.
So. Very good. It could be. Yeah. Very cool. Could you tell us, Brandon, a couple things? You and I have talked a little bit about this, and that's kind of what stirred this morning, that something, I don't think I even really realized this even as I sing songs, there's something about good songwriting that kind of has this balance of risk and honesty, and it kind of just doesn't stay like, oh, isn't it a nice day outside? It kind of really starts to hit something home. Can you talk more about that? Like, what's your experience in songwriting as you've talked with your songwriter friends? Kind of how does that play out for you guys?
Yeah, I think I started like a lot of other songwriters did, where you write songs in your room by yourself and you never play them for anybody because it's kind of terrifying. Writing a song is kind of like someone reading your diary in a way, because you're just offering all of your, not just like a situation, but your thoughts and emotions about a situation. I had a songwriter friend that says your songs are like your kids. And if someone doesn't like your song, it's like them saying your kids are ugly. Like, what are you supposed to do? Yeah. It's my kid. So yeah, I would say there's a risk, but then once you offer yourself and it's received and other people resonate with it, that's like the most amazing. That's why people songwrite, I think. Mm.
Almost a sense of like the kind of as a collective, as human beings, we begin to, there's something in us that this connects around something honest. Could you talk about what makes that, what in your mind, what makes a good song, lyrically speaking, at least kind of what makes a good song, or I don't know if you want to contrast it with a bad song necessarily, but just kind of as you talk about lyrics and you talk about songwriting, what are some of those pieces that work for a good songwriter?
Well, this is very subjective because there are people in the room that probably hate country music or, you know, that kind of thing. So they would say, well, Brandon, your songs are bad. But as far as I'm concerned, I think, you know, being a lyrical driven songwriter, honesty really is the very best thing. How do you approach a subject? You're not emotionally manipulating people. You're not saying things that you think you want to hear. And that's really the trap, is you write songs for other people that you can start to write what you think people want to hear instead of what's really in you. And I think there's something that's just amazing that you can tell right away when there's just an honest song. Mm. It just blows people away. And mostly I think just because they feel it too, you know? So.
Now, you've got a couple examples. I asked Brandon to kind of give us a couple examples of this. So he's going to sing a few lines out. Like, can you tell us about the first one? The first one's like, it's heavy, but it's like, it's a good example of honesty.
Like sad songs, I'll be honest with you. But this particular song is a song that I think most people can relate to only because it's about a relationship that has kind of gone not well, a relationship that has kind of lost its fire. And most of us either know someone who's been through that situation, or maybe some of us have been through it ourselves. And when I first heard this song, I was just like, oh my gosh, it's so sad. I'll play just.
And this is Chris Stapleton, right?
Chris Stapleton.
We need to put him on that so he gets the credit. Wherever.
I'll just play a little bit of it.
Okay, yeah.
We pass in the halls, we sleep in separate rooms. The only time we ever talk is when the monthly bills are due. We go to work, we go to church, we fake the perfect life. I'm past the point of giving in. My tears have all been cried. We could just go on like this. Say the word, we'll call it quits. Baby, you could go or you could stay. I wanna love you.
Oh, that's pretty heavy. Yeah.
So sad. I mean, like, he's lamenting on this relationship, and at the very end he says, look, even if you leave, I want to love you. He's like exactly what you're talking about. Like, I'm singing what I want to be true. I want to love you no matter what. Anyway, super. But
yeah, it's almost this thing I hear, and this is something I'm. But this is, you know, what I'm learning, you know, in conversations with you. Also, I'll put in a plug for Malcolm Gladwell's podcast, Revisionist History. Go listen to King of Tears episode. It'll change your perspective on songs. But it's, you know, it's almost like without that honesty, Brandon, I'll put words in your mouth, without that honesty, without that willingness to take that risk and putting those words out there, like we wouldn't connect. If it's just like, you know, I'm really sad you're not here. We would go,
my relationship is kind of hard lately. Like,
yeah.
Shucks. Yeah. You know, yeah, I wouldn't really.
There's something deep in there. I think that's really good. All right, you got another example. And this is one that this is more one of yours, not Chris's that we have to pay money for. But this is one
Hopefully
of yours.
I'll
we can pay
Chris.
You. Yeah, we could sell it to Chris too. He might be listening now. I don't want to set up too much. Why don't you give the story on it? I think it's a fascinating story.
Oh, it's just my grandpa was telling a story about someone that he was at a hard time in his life, and he met someone that he like instantly had this amazing connection with. And when he ended the story, I was just like, that has to be a song. And so I wrote a song about it. I don't want to give it away, but I can give it a little segment.
It's your song, whatever you want to do.
All right.
Yeah.
See if you can follow this. It's a little hard to follow, but.
Okay.
He found love on Highway 17. In the time it took to drive a stranger home. He left there with her number on a matchbook in his pocket and a faith in something he'd never known. His car broke down a few miles from his doorstep, but he didn't mind the walk home in the rain, 'cause he was dreaming of forevers in the magic of her laughter and how his world would never be the same. All right, here's the kicker, ready? It wasn't till he reached into his pocket the next day that he understood the weight of what the rain had washed away. Who knows how we choose to write our stories? Why some stay and others fade away? Or how we lose love in all its glory? Something simple as a rainy day. Maybe the point of living is learning to let go of all the sweet love stories never told. And the matchbook man, she never got to know.
Well, I like yours better than Chris's song. So. But just in case people didn't hear that, basically, she wrote the number down
on a matchbook.
And then the rain
washed. They didn't have cell phones, you know, back in the 70s or whenever doing this.
When was this?
And he wrote it on a De Anza Hotel matchbook. And then his clothes got all wet from the rain and it disintegrated the matchbook. And he never saw her again.
Oh, gosh.
Devastating.
It's devastating.
But honest.
But there's also, I think, with that, it is honest.
People are like, where is this going? Yeah.
There is a moral to this. Actually, the moral is that there's a moral to this. I think, too, when I hear that, and this is what you and I were talking about, is that there's a moral to that song, and you played the last part of it there, where you just kind of who knows where how everything kind of connects together. And it's almost though that moral, in my mind, wouldn't have got there unless the honesty was there before. Is that...
Yeah, you had to paint the picture of everything that was happening. And that one happens to have... You know, maybe the point of living is just learning to let go of those stories. Sometimes we get stuck in the what if, and there's a lot of people that live their lives in that. And sometimes you just have to release it. My grandpa had a great life and married a great woman, and he was really, really happy. And he didn't let that stick in his head. It just stuck in my head when he told me about it. So.
Thanks. I think this is a great example and a great model, because not that you need to go home and write songs like Brandon or Chris Stapleton or whoever, but I think it's a model of us pushing beyond the superficial. It's a model of us saying, you know what, maybe there's something more that really kind of grips and gets at us when we go a little bit deeper to that noblest part of ourselves, to that soul spirit stuff that Mary was talking about. I want to end with one last thing, and we're going to actually end this together this morning, but I want to tell you a story, the background of the story behind the Christmas song, O Holy Night. And it really kind of brings all of this together, because the way that the song, O Holy Night, came to be is really of two people being willing to take a risk. And the way the story goes is that around 1847, in a small French village, because they're all small French villages, and near Avignon, there was a poet in a local parish priest wanted a poem for Christmas Eve Mass. And so he asked this poet, he said to him, "Why would you be willing to write a poem for us?" And so the poet said, "Yes, I'd be happy to." And so he takes the Gospel of Luke, reads through the Christmas story, kind of like actually like we're doing, would have read this passage that we read today. And the poet puts himself in his mind and just tries to imagine, what would it be like to have been there that night when Jesus was born? So he puts himself in that place and then writes the lyrics to this song. Cantique de Noël was formed in 1847. And then he asked a friend of his, who was actually a pretty well-known composer of the day, would you put some music to this? And so his friend put some music to this. And the song just, as you can imagine, because we still sing it today, it exploded in popularity. And the church all over France was singing it on Christmas time. And until a time came when they stopped singing it. Because someone found out the background of the poet and the background of the composer. The poet who wrote the lyrics for O Holy Night wasn't a Christian. He wasn't a Jesus follower. He was happy to help, and he wanted to help, and he took the Gospel of Luke, and he tried to imagine what it would be like, but he wasn't a Jesus follower. And to compound things, in that particular day, his composer friend was Jewish. And so the church in that particular part of the world at that particular day said, that's too much. And so they denounced the song. About a decade or so later, a guy in America named John Sullivan Dwight heard about the song and introduced it into America. And the interesting thing about John Sullivan Dwight is he was an abolitionist, and this happened right around the Civil War. And so what struck him was that line that is always kind of, I've wondered where this line comes from, but it struck him, that line that says, "Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother. And in his name, all oppression shall cease." For John Sullivan Dwight, this was a very real thing. And he said, we got to sing that song. So he brought that song into America right around the time of the Civil War. Fast forward to 1906 on Christmas Eve, and the story kind of reaches its culmination. Christmas Eve 1906, a former chemist under Thomas Edison got on the radio and spoke. It was one of the first times that human voice was heard over the radio waves. And you know what he spoke? He pulled out the Gospel of Luke. Very popular. He pulled out the Gospel of Luke and read from the Christmas story. The other interesting thing, though, is he was a musician, and he had a violin, and he picked up his violin and he played a song. It was the first song ever played over the radio. You know what song it was? O Holy Night. But think about this. All of this started in a small French village. A song written by two guys who didn't even really believe Jesus was the Messiah, but they said, you know what? There's something, though. There's something that happened on that night that resonates with us, that we want to be a part of, that we want to take a risk and tell the story of. I'm so thankful that they did. I hope you would do that this Christmas season. I'd hope you find a way, maybe a little bit deeper than just the surface. Maybe you have to wait till after Christmas is done and after all the parties and all the family stuff is done, but that you just get some time and say, you know what, God, I've kind of lived here. I want to live a little bit deeper in that soul, spirit kind of space. And I want to be willing to put my life into your hands. So Brandon's going to lead us. I want to invite you to stand. We're going to sing O Holy Night and let that be sung over us today.
The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared, and the soul felt its wound. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
That second verse, truly he taught us. Let your voices.
Truly he taught to love one another. His law is love, and his gospel is peace. Chains shall he break for the slave.
Something that happened on that night that changed everything. And we're just in the middle of this Advent season. I can't wait for the next few weeks. If you're new, we would love to meet you. You can head out to guest services right by the front door. Some people who'd love to say hello. If you want prayer, our prayer team will be here and in the back. And then also for you to know, for the 23rd and 24th, we'll be here next Sunday, 23rd and the 24th at 5 o'clock. I'll be thinking who you will invite to those services. But there'll be different services. We've got some creative things planned for both that you'll want to be a part of and experience. And we're finding new ways to tell this story and from different angles. And I'm so excited to be able to do it with you. Let's close, if we would, with a good word, a benediction, as we head out today. May you trust that your Father is good and worthy of trusting. May you see that the mercy of Jesus in a fresh and new way. And may you be open to the Holy Spirit drawing you to honesty with God, to a place of freedom with Him this Advent season. Have a great Sunday. We will see you next week. See you then.